Welcome to Tackling the Opioid Epidemic with the Prescription Playbook, a conversation about empowering and educating communities to prevent overdoses and end the opioid crisis. My name is Paul Abraham. I'm a prevention specialist with the Prescription Playbook, and I'll be your host today. We're excited to welcome our guest, Jane McFadden, coroner of Vermilion County in Central East Illinois. Thanks for joining us, Jane. How are you doing today?
Fine. How are you?
Good, good, good. It's great to see you again. I know we've talked so much in the past. I'm just glad to have you here to kind of tell your story and so we can learn from your experiences.
Absolutely. To just tell you a little bit about myself, I spent 6 years in the United States Army, and that's how I ended up here in Illinois. I married a guy from here. And when I got out of the Army, I was hired by the Danville Police Department in Danville, Illinois, and I worked there for 22 years. When I left, I was the commander of Criminal Investigations Division of the police department. Just to give you an idea where we are in East Central Illinois. We're right on the Indiana border. So right along the I-74 corridor. So we have, you know, a direct trafficking route where I-57 goes north and south is just to the west of us in Champaign County. And we are direct route to places such as Chicago or to Indianapolis, St. Louis. A lot of people travel, and I-70 goes a little south of us out of our county. We do have routes in and out of where we are. We're a population of about 80,000 in our county, Danville being the largest city and the county seat. We were a law enforcement agency of a little over 100 people with our civilian employees as well. The Vermilion County Sheriff's Department has about 50 officers. So we were right around 73, I believe. When I retired, I wanted to continue my career in law enforcement. In Illinois, there's 101 coroners and one medical examiner. So we have 102 counties, but Cook County is actually a medical examiner because they handle so many cases, and a lot of forensic pathologists train with them. The other 101 of us are technically law enforcement because we do have the same powers granted to the sheriff to us as well. So I wanted to continue my career in law enforcement. I had gotten a lot of training in death investigation. I was the crime scene unit commander before I went into investigations, which was a patrol division responsibility. I was in charge of patrol division prior to the going into investigations. So I did understand what the drug problem was in the city of Danville. However, I didn't know how expansive it was and how far reaching it was in our county until I became the county coroner. I've been the coroner for about 7 years this month. So when I took office, I started to keep more statistical data on drug overdoses, suicides, traffic crash statistics, veteran involved incidents, and to track the veteran population. We do have a big VA hospital here, so that was important to me as well, also being an Army veteran myself. So that's basically what brought me to the coroner's office, because of all that knowledge and experience. And I taught for 20 years at the local Danville Area Community College in criminal justice. So this is why I decided to continue my career. I was only 53, 54 when I got this job. So I thought, well, I could do this for 20 years. That's what brought me to the coroner's office.
Wow, it definitely seems like you've got a lot of varied experiences that have kind of led to the perfect situation as a coroner.
It was just the right opportunity at the right time.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, I'm definitely glad that you found it. The community definitely benefits from your knowledge and your experience. There's no doubt. So it sounds like you said 22 years as a police officer, and then you moved to the coroner that you've been for 7 years. A lot of your career has kind of went through the time that we've been dealing with opioids as a community, as the whole country. Could you tell us a little bit about how you've seen opioids grow during your career, both in your community and kind of as a whole?
I started in the police department in 1994. So I would like to say that most of our drugs back then were things like cocaine, powder cocaine, and then crack cocaine. And that came to our communities. You know, we had no idea that about methamphetamine. We had no idea about, you know, about heroin, knowing that heroin was an intravenous drug or injectable drug or needles. It dawned on us that we would have a heroin problem. So it kind of morphed into methamphetamine, And at one point, I believe in 2006, we had the most meth labs seized in the state of Illinois in Vermilion County. So everybody thinks, wow, you had a lot of meth cooks and things here. And we did. However, we had a very successful Vermilion County Metropolitan Enforcement Group led by the state police. So we were very lucky to have them doing drug enforcement here. So we did seize a lot of meth labs, and that kind of morphed into then heroin made its debut, or I should say, became quite the problem here for a while. And that pretty much happened about the time, or just prior to the time that I took office in 2016. So we had heroin here, but it really became a problem in recent years. Then we moved into fentanyl. Fentanyl probably 2018, we started seeing fentanyl death. We had in our community, I believe that most of the fentanyl at that time or prior was prescribed fentanyl for cancer patients or people who were in hospice, end of life care. So a lot of people, were abusing someone else's prescription medication. It became kind of the thing, chewing fentanyl patches, that kind of thing. And then we started seeing an influx of the pills. Of fentanyl pills. Now it's showing up where people are buying, going out to buy their drug of preference, such as cocaine or methamphetamine, and they're not getting what they are buying or think they're buying. So sometimes it's just pure fentanyl. I just had two deaths about a week apart at the same trailer park in the same trailer, and they both were fentanyl and methamphetamine toxicities. So we are at 28, I believe, right now. And I would say probably about 23 of those are opioid involved, hydrocodone, but most of them fentanyl. A couple years ago, we had a drug overdose involving a drug we hadn't seen here in East Central Illinois. I believe Peoria County, the coroner there had seen a case, and then we had a case of isotretinoin, which at the time, it took us a long time for our toxicology to come back on that because they didn't have a test to be able to give us the qualitative results and the quantitative results. So we had to go through a research arm of that lab to be able to find that information. And that's when that started to appear here. As far as xylazine, we haven't seen a lot of that yet. I'm just prefacing this with we're probably going to see a lot of that. I think we had one case that involved that, but we are consistently in the double digits and above for our county. So I actually had the paper here from before, but we actually had, I believe, I think we were ranked like in the top 10 or 12 counties for drug overdoses per capita here in the state of Illinois. So it has been, a very serious problem here. And getting the word out, we are trying to work with the community members and with our local hospitals and our medical staffs and our personnel to be able to address ways to get people into a rehabilitation. Unfortunately, some of the stumbling blocks are transportation. So we thought we solved that. Also, getting people to want to go into drug rehab. That seems to be the big kicker. My feelings, my opinion, my professional opinion is we probably need to get more medication-assisted drug rehabilitation going for people because it's not like back years ago where you could just get off cigarettes by going cold turkey. This is not the way to go. People need some kind of way to step down, and be able to function and become productive members of society and be able to live their lives. And, when somebody goes out to buy a illicit drug on the street and they're not getting what they paid for or what they thought they were getting, we're having people who are dying unnecessarily. I'm not saying any of those deaths are necessary, but unnecessarily because they don't even know what they're taking. And it always was kind of a Russian roulette kind of thing, but it just seems to be way more prevalent now. So, you're not going to scare people off drugs. We can tell people there's fentanyl in practically everything you have out there now, and it's not going to stop people who have a drug addiction because there's a physical need, you know, for that. So how can we get rid of that physical need? Let's get people on medicine to get them off of the drugs that they are abusing.
Absolutely. I think that's an awesome piece of advice. I agree with you completely. It's not the situation that we thought it was back in the 90s, like with cigarettes. I think that's a great comparison. Quitting cigarettes cold turkey is definitely a tough situation, but this is a completely different situation altogether.
And it's still, and cigarettes are still physically addicting. I quit cold turkey myself, so I can speak from experience. You know, my mother died from esophageal cancer. That got me off cigarettes. I said, hey, when my 8-year-old looked at me and said, Mom, are you going to die like grandma? You know, wow. Can't say no, so I better quit smoking. So, and my husband quit smoking, but he took medication to get off cigarettes. So he did need that little extra to get him off of cigarettes because he didn't want to quit smoking, but he wanted to live long enough to see our grandchildren grow up. So that was important. So, you know, we need to, you know, they say people hit rock bottom, but let's not wait until that happens to get people the opportunity. So our big push now is to meet people where they are, kind of thing. We've had a lot of people step up to the plate. There's not a lot of money out there going around, grant money and that kind of thing, but we have a lot of people who are stepping up and providing assistance or helping people to get to where they need to be so they can get clean. And, you know, it's not so much the way we think about, you know, in the 60s and 70s, you're thinking about drug addicts, you're thinking they're biker people, or, you know, this hits all socioeconomic levels in our community. It doesn't care if you're white, you're black, you're Asian, you're Indian, you're, you know, Hispanic. It's all across the board, male, female, all ages. You know, my most recent was 67. I'm having people hit overdoses in their 50s and 60s. You know, I'm not getting kids. We're not getting teenagers here, thank God, but we are getting people in their mid 20s, early to mid 20s, you know, a few of those sprinkled in, but most of my people are male whites, 45 years of age is my median. So it's hitting everybody because they're going out, you know, people who abuse cocaine, they're going out to buy cocaine and they think they're buying cocaine and they're buying straight fentanyl. No cocaine in it at all. You know, I have people who say, well, you know, they were alcohol. They had a lot of alcohol problems. So I just thought they were drunk. And I'm like, no, they were on fentanyl and they were, you know, gasping for breath. And that's one of the things that really shocked me when we go to these deaths. You know, you ask them, when's the last time you saw them alive or knew that they were breathing or alive? And they'll say, well, I heard him snoring in there. He was snoring really loud. So I knew he was alive at that point. Well, that was probably when they were actually gasping for breath because their respiratory system was shutting down. And that's probably the point of when they needed to have Narcan, which is great. So that kind of gives me to the next thing is the distribution of Narcan. It took a long time to be able to get that over the counter and get it into the hands of people who needed it. But I always think that that's kind of a false sense of security for some people because they're like, well, I have Narcan, so I'll be okay. Well, you have to have somebody in your group or in your circle with you, A, and B, have them not abusing so they can give you the Narcan because it's great to have it. But if there's nobody there to administer it, it doesn't do you any good. So, you know, sending families home with that and getting family members to have that in their homes is awesome. And we have had prompt program through the Champaign County Health Department actually provide some of that to our community. And then I saw where I was standing in line to pick up a prescription at Walgreens. And at Walgreens, I looked over and I saw a display for Narcan. And it was completely empty. And I was like, gosh, I hope that was because everybody picked it up and they didn't run out because a lot of people can get their hands on that now. So that's another thing is to get the Narcan in the hands of the people who can use it to save someone's life. Our fire departments give little bags to people when they go to a drug overdose or, you know, the fire department has it. The police departments have fentanyl drops, the spray that they can spray in your nose. Because a lot of people in the beginning, when we first got the kits, they were a needle and you had to inject somebody. And a lot of people didn't like that because they're like, I don't want to do that. I don't want people to shy away from doing the nasal spray. And I also put out there to everybody, even if the person's not overdosing on an opioid and you give them Narcan, it is not going to hurt them. It's not going to do anything to them. If they're not having a drug, an opioid drug overdose, maybe they're passed out because they've drank too much or something. But if they don't come to and you're giving them Narcan, it's probably not an opioid. So, but it doesn't hurt them if you gave it to them inadvertently thinking that it was an opioid overdose. And that's what I tell people. It's better to give it to somebody who you think is having an overdose than to not do it or not be there to be able to provide that assistance.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, I definitely agree. I think that's the most important thing is to know that you can give it, whether you're sure or not. There's no ill effects as far as receiving Narcan. You did speak about fentanyl a little bit. I was hoping that you could go into, I think most people are aware that fentanyl is more severe than the opioids that we were used to prior to that, heroin and prescription medications. But could you really speak to how much more severe and how much more dangerous that is, the differences
Well,
between them?
people don't realize it's 100 times more potent than morphine, and morphine is given to people, in the hospital. And that's another thing, too, that people don't understand is, fentanyl was developed for end-of-life care, to give people pain relief and sometimes for surgical procedures. If you've ever had, I had my appendix out, I've had a baby. I never had to be knocked out for the baby, thankfully, but, I did have my appendix out. That you could have been given fentanyl at the hospital. And that's why they have an anesthesiologist actually administer that and monitor you. Well, you don't have that when you have drugs off the street. There's nobody there to administer any kind of, drug to back it off or to bring you out of it. And there's nobody there to save you if, to administer the Narcan if you need the Narcan. So I don't think people realize how potent and how such a small amount, 2 milligrams, could kill you. I mean, that's a few grains of a powder, and people don't realize. And then they have these fentanyl test strips that they're really promoting, which I think is a great idea. However, if you have powdered substance, you think, it's cocaine or whatever, and you stick the test strip in some of the powder and it comes back saying, that it's not fentanyl. How do you know the powder over here doesn't have the fentanyl in it? So you would have to test everything. I just think it gives people another false sense of security. I'm not being the Debbie Downer or whatever, the person who's bringing the bad things, but I just want people to realize that don't rely so heavily on things of that nature to be able to save you because it could backfire.
Absolutely. I think you're definitely correct about that. It's easy to see one of the many interventions or harm reduction methods put into place for users or people using to see them as kind of a solution, whereas it's one piece in a giant puzzle that kind of makes the entire community safer. Yeah, absolutely. I definitely appreciate you being here. And we've talked about some harm reduction stuff, like you said, even some treatment stuff. Before I let you go, kind of from a prevention mindset, could you give us any advice that may help kind of fight the opioid epidemic in the future? You spoke a little bit about how we don't really have childhood overdoses right now, and I would just love to keep it that way, and maybe some advice to benefit the adults that'll be there in just a few years.
Thankfully, there by the grace of God goes our community without having teenagers or accidental overdose. You read about that daycare where they had fentanyl in the apartment and a child died from having contact with that. The residue, the law enforcement can only do so much. The medical field can only do so much. We need to get everybody on board. We need to get the pharmaceutical companies to help us. Because I'm sure that people who develop some of these drugs don't want it out there in the community to be abused. That's not what they developed this for. A lot of these people go into that field thinking they're going to find the cure to cancer or something like that. They want to help people. And I understand, that we have a society that that leans more into pain management than maybe we ever did before. You know, these pain management clinics, tertiary pain clinics, and that kind of thing that popped up since the 1970s because we're trying to get people so they're not in so much pain. And I understand pain management. However, you know, a lot of people, you know, nobody wakes up and says, hey, I'm going to be today, I think I'm going to be a fentanyl addict or I'm going to be, you know, an opioid addicted person. That's not how it goes. You know, something led them down that path. And a lot of times it could be things such as, you know, a football injury in high school, a car accident, a work related on the job, a work related accident where a fall is involved or something. And so people get dependent on prescription medication. And then the prescription medication, they start to take them off of that and they still think they need that pain management, or maybe they really do need that pain management, but they're not getting the care, the proper care that they need. So now they're going to go out and get it illicitly. So, you know, we need to combat the stigma, number one. Number two, we need to get medication assisted recovery. I think that's a big thing. And we need to get the word out. Some of the best people who have come forward to educate our community are people who have lost a loved one, women who've lost children, or men who've lost their kids, who, you know, of whatever age, to opioid addiction. And I think those are the people that we need more and more to get out. And because of the stigma, a lot of people don't want to come forward. You know, I had this job less than 6 months when I found out that a friend's son had a heroin addiction. And because we went to the house and he had overdosed and died. And that's how I found out. And I felt so bad because I don't know why we didn't know that. This friend of ours had a family member, had a kid who was suffering with this problem in his early 20s. So, you know, that kind of hit home to me. I think everybody knows somebody at this point or knows of someone they knew who had this happen in their family. And I think that, you know, we need to get education that it's like, you know, a three-pronged approach. You know, we need to get medication into the hands of people who need to be medically brought out of addiction. We need to get awareness and Narcan into the hands of the people who need it. And we need that education component for the young people to get them in to learning, you know, of what the dangers are for this to happen to them, you know, because if we can get kids early enough, and then you might not have this problem, might be able to stem the tide of addiction.
Absolutely. That's definitely the goal here is to educate the kids, prevent the issues we're seeing right now. Well, I definitely appreciate you and this learn from your experience. I'm sure a lot of people have learned quite a bit from this talk today. We really appreciate you taking the time to speak with us. And we appreciate everyone listening. Join us in the fight to end the opioid epidemic. For more information on how we can work together to raise awareness on the opioid epidemic and end it once and for all, you can find us at ilhpp.org/the prescription playbook, as well as on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook.